Okay, so Rav Mirsch has an interesting tshuva. Somebody asked him about what's the issur? Is there an issur of stealing a test to be able to get the answers for some type of regions? I don't know, was regions or was some type of accreditation or some type of test, etc. And the tshuva was asking in regard to the issur of Ganeivas Das. So Russia writes back, it is Ganeivas Das, but then he writes back, the truth is it's much more than Ganeivas Das. He thinks it's much more than Ganeivas Das. There's actual Gzela involved. He says, what's a Gzela involved? He says, this person is going to go through school, he's going to go on to college, he's going to get some type of a degree and go into business, and people are going to hire him as he's going to work for them, and they're going to be paying him, believing that he's gotten all of his accreditation. Meanwhile, he has not really gotten all of his accreditation. He just stole the answers to these tests. So he's being hired under false pretenses. So Betzim, he's a Goslin. He's getting paid. Taras Gazela. That's a Mershus Psak. So Friday morning, we were talking about the Shir, spoke about the Ikrim. So afterwards, somebody asked me about this. We were talking about Tchias HaMesim, etc. You know, so the point of Tchias HaMesim. So I want to talk about that. But he said he doesn't like thinking about it because it just creates this emotion of pressure, etc. Thinking about Ganeden and Gehenna is not just this scary thing. It probably is. Probably should be. But I said, but that's not the issue. The issue is much more basic. You can't live a lie. We have to recognize what our reality is. You know, I'm not discussing whether you get reward or not get reward, whether you're punished or not punished. That's not the issue. The issue is a person has to be aware of realities. You know, I've said over this moshul before. This goes back many, many years ago when I was a bacher still. That's a lot of years ago, like some back in the 1850s or something like that. When I was a bacher still. Once a chaver of mine told me that he was a rebbe, and he made some reference to something in his shir. So the chaver of mine is actually younger than I am. This is about 10 years ago. So he didn't look that old. And his eighth graders, and they afterwards here's one boy, saying to others, says that was from a TV show where rebbe was young in the 1940s. So he was looking at himself how old do you think I am? There's no TV in the 1940s. That's besides the point. But he looked at how old do I look to you? This is So there's something which I don't know whether it still exists or not. When I was a booker, this was a common thing which we used. It's called driveway companies. So driveway company was this. Somebody had this great idea. You had to transport a car from city A to city B, from Cleveland to Chicago, Chicago to New York, etc., whatever it is. So you had to get it there. It cost money. So they have these companies which put you on this big those big tractor trailers which move cars, and it's expensive, etc. So somebody came up with a great idea. You go to Mr. So-and-so, he comes and delivers the car, and says, okay, you charge him $500. You put out a notice that somebody wants to drive a car from city A to city B. You get some college student who needs to go from Chicago to New York. You give them all the gas, all the tolls. You don't give them, it costs them $100, $150. Right? He's very happy. He got from Chicago to New York for free. Didn't cost him a penny. You pocket $350. The fellow's very happy. He got his car from Chicago to New York. Everybody's very happy. It's a great system, right? And you pocket the $350 a shot. So there was three, at least there was three driveway companies in Cleveland. There was the AAAAA driveway company, because they were the first one in the phone book. And then there was the AAAAAA, everybody had their fight to be the first one in the phone book, driveway company. So I was in there one time, picking up a car. I don't remember, I was going through. Now, of course, there's one slight problem. There's this one slight detail they have to be worried about is, of course, that your college student might decide to drive away with the car, right? That's been not very good for your business. So stealing anything over a state line is a federal offense. It's investigated by the FBI. And they were very nice to you. They would walk in, they would fingerprint you three times, and they would take a picture of you from all directions before you started. And they inform you, you have this and this amount of time to deliver the car. And if not, your file is given over to the FBI, and you're okay. The other issue, of course, was the case of any damage, etc. So you would have to, you know, they would have to check your driving record and stuff like that, and you would check the car. They shouldn't blame you for something which is there already anyway. So I'm there in the office. I'm picking up a car going from, I think, Cleveland to Chicago. Maybe Cleveland. I don't remember. I think it was Cleveland to Chicago. And while I was there, there's a fellow over there who's picking up a car going to Phoenix. So now, Phoenix is about 24 hours worth of driving. So they told the fellow that he has, you know, I think it says Monday, so he's leaving Monday morning, so he has to deliver the car Friday morning. So they give him basically 3 days plus to drive, and then he has to deliver the car by a certain time, and if not, he's, right. For me, going to Chicago is 1 day's worth of driving, you have to deliver by the next morning, by 12 o'clock, you have to deliver the car. So I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, I mean, they're only giving the guy basically about 8 hours of driving per day. Guy my age, you know, he could definitely handle more than 8 hours of driving a day. Like, why are they giving him only 8 hours of driving a day? They can give him 10 hours, 12 hours, you know. I mean, you could push it to the 14 hours and get it there in 2 days, you know, day and a half, get it delivered, etc. And it hit me that, you know, they don't really want to push it. They want the driver to be well-rested and to drive safely and not to make any chances and make any mistakes. And they're getting from point A to point B, they're very happy to do that, right? So it means he could take a rest all the way. He can even, you know, if he wants to stop, you know, and go to, you know, golfing, you know, one night when he's on the way, not a problem. But if he stays on the golf course, it's a federal offense. So the Rosh gave us a path to go from point A to point B. And that's our job. We can take a rest along the way, and that's fine. Actually, he wants us to take a rest along the way. We need to rejuvenate to take a rest along the way, whatever that might be. But if you make the focus the rest stop, it's a federal offense. The Russian gave us a path in this world. He wants us, he understands that we need rest. We need relaxation. We need to air out. Fine. If that becomes the focus in life, and that's what it's all about, this is not about tonight's event. But it just happens to fit. Anyway, right, if that's what becomes the focus in life, right, so that's a federal offense. You lost track of the fact that you're on a road going somewhere. So Pesil Shasharim, Perak Aleph, starts off with Yisrael Chassidus Shor Shavod HaTamima. The foundation of everything is recognizing that this is Erev Shabbos. Mishat Torah Erev Shabbos, Yechol Shabbos. So I don't like thinking about Shabbos. I don't like thinking about the idea. Imagine Erev Shabbos. I can't deal with the pressure. You know, I can't deal with the pressure of Erev Shabbos. I just don't want to think about the fact that Erev Shabbos because, like, you know, I've left out food and it'd be very depressing. I'll have a lot of food and be very exciting. I can't think about that. I just go around and pretend like it's not Shabbos not coming. Because it's too much pressure. I can't deal with the pressure. Every week in my house, you know, the Erev Shabbos, not my personal house, but say, let's say the guy's staying in his house, right? Erev Shabbos is pushed. I grew up with tremendous pressure. Erev Shabbos, like screaming and yelling and fighting. I'm not nervous. It doesn't help you. It's still Erev Shabbos. So I'm not saying that you have to sit there and get fadigued about it, but you have to realize that it's Erev Shabbos and you need to prepare food. And, you know, you're not going to have food. So I'll use the other mashal that says, you know, the yeshabosh and the yam. You know, says, you know, there's no provisions available in the yam. It's very hard to pick things up. You know, just, you know, maybe nowadays you'll have a helicopter drop it for you. But, I mean, like, basically, it's done. So, Rambam comes along and says, you know, you can't just focus on the here and now. That's not the issue. There's a bigger picture. There's a 5 years, there's 10 years, and there's a lot longer than that down the road. So it's interesting if you look at the Yugim Malikrim, the Rama says the Yugim Malikrim Reb Chaim's Masvet in the Kud of the Yugim Malikrim is like we said on Friday is to describe a relationship. So if you don't understand the relationship, you're not in the ball game. Bad reference. Okay, right? You don't understand the relationship. You can't do what you have to do. Every part of the Torah is important. There's certain things you were shugging, you didn't know, you didn't realize, you tenek shenishba. All those arguments are 100% true, but you still don't know what the relationship is. If there's primary elements of what, let's define the relationship. I didn't know there's Torah. You know, so we have no tannas in you. You're still not in the bit. You're not connected. I never heard of the concept called Torah. Okay, I feel bad for you. You know, it's in that book, and we have no tannas in you. And you're a wonderful person. We have, you know, but you still don't know. You're still not in the ball game. You're not in the relationship. Right? The relationship, again, we don't know what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is. We have no understanding of Kodesh Baruch Hu's being. We have no understanding of that. The Nevi Shachaim, Shar Aleph, it says what we know about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, what he revealed to us, what he wants us to know, because the human mind cannot grasp an infinite being. It's impossible. So even the desire that for uses the name in the first Kodesh Baruch Hu is called Ein Sof, he's infinite. And even that, he says, that's only, from our vantage point, we use that name. Even that name doesn't really describe a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You describe the being of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's ridiculous to talk about such a thing. So what are we describing? How he interfaces with us. That's one half. The second half is, okay, now that he interfaces with us, what is the interface? He interfaces with us, and that's the Torah. And then there's the receiving end, which is us at the receiving end. We receive it. We interact with him. Now that he's given us, so I have the employer, I have the employee, and I have the rules of the employment. And I have the purpose of the employment. And then I have the actual employed. And then what is the goal of that employment? So what is the... But it's fascinating, like we mentioned on Friday, that it's not clear anywhere in the Gemara there's such a concept. Where do you find such a concept? Mishnah, beginning of the last parak in Sanhedrin. So why does it have Tchias HaMeisim? As it just mentions one of them. There's 13 according to the Rambam. Why is Tchias HaMeisim the one that we're going to focus on? And the answer has to be because that's the goal. The goal of knowing a Kadosh Baruch Hu exists, his interface with us, and how we interface with him is to get to the goal of the final reward called Tchias HaMeisim. So that's the purpose. Everything else is just leading up to that step. So Haloi Davar Hu, we go through Yetzias Mitzrayim, we come to Yam Suf, and Chazal say, and Takanu, where does it say Tchias HaMeisim in the Torah? Oz Yashar Moshe, it doesn't say Oz Shor Moshe, the Bnei Yisrael, or Shoru, didn't say they sang then, but it says they will sing. That's where it's Merumas, by Kriyas Yamsuf. The Kli saw after Yamsuf, when they saw what happened on Yamsuf, and they're going to express in a Shira, a thought process, they expressed it in such a way to indicate that this is, or the Torah described it in such a way that they were saying in such a way they're going to be doing this, Lost in Love. This is the message, the final culmination of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The final moment expresses, you see this in the Kudah of Tchias HaMeisim. Means, you live a life with an awareness of a future. There's a fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says there was a fascinating individual, his name was Gevia ben Pesisa. So Gevia ben Pesisa was, as his own description, he was not a Talmud Chacham, he was an average person from the Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara has three stories with him. The Gemara has one story that he defended Klal Yisrael. Alexander Mukden, it was time Alexander the Great, and the Mitzrayim came to court in front of Alexander Mukden against the Jews. They wanted to reclaim all of the stolen property that the Jews took with them when they left Mitzrayim. Because it says, Psukim say, the Klal Yisrael left with a lot of booty. Right? They took all the stuff from Mitzrayim. We would like to have it back. So he offered to go to represent the Jews. He says, listen, if I win, it's the Torah won. If I lose, then I'm over. It's like me won. They lost, so it doesn't prove anything. So it's not a bizoyan, etc. So he goes. He defends the Jewish viewpoint that we worked a lot of years as a slave. We would like to get compensation, etc. And fine. The Gemara says it. That there was a second situation. The people from the Bnei Afriki came to Alexander. They wanted to make a claim against the Jews because it says they're from descended from Canaan, and we live in Eretz Canaan. It's our land. Give us back our land. So he says, "What's your right? The right that your land?" It says because it says in the Pesukim of the Torah. It also says, "Eved Avadim Yilechov Mashikan Eved Kan Rabbi." So that was the answer for that one. And the Morris has a third conversation. The Morris says that over there, which is the one I want to talk about. The Morris says there was a conversation between a tzaduki, a min, and Gevi Ben Pesisa, And it's a fascinating conversation. So the Tzuki says to you, this is why it's here in the Morris and Hedgen in the last paragraph, because this is really where the conversation is. It talks about Tchiyas HaMeisim. So the Tzuki comes to Gavi HaMebesis. He says, Vay l'chayin chayavim, woe is to you, you're Russia. You're Russia. Why is Gavi HaMebesis a Russia? He says, you say that the dead people will come alive again. He says, we see that people which are alive die. People which are dead are going to come alive. That's what he says to Gavi HaMebesis. Gavi HaMebesis says, woe to you, chayavim, vay l'chayin chayavim, woe is to you, you're Russia. He says, what's your Russia? He says, if somebody was not alive, he could become alive. Someone's alive, for sure, he could become alive. Right? If you do it, if he never did it before, right? Once you did it once, it's easier, right? So that's his answer. Oh, good, fine. There's a funny word in the conversation of the Tzuluki. Tzuluki says to Chibi Masisa, says, Vay l'chayin chayava. Woe is to you, Russia. Chibi Masisa, why are you a Russia? Because you believe in Tchias HaMeisim. That's Rishus. Well, what's the reason to believe in Tchias HaMeisim? You might call him a shoita, you call him whatever, but why is he a chayava? What was the Saluki's taina? He says, Vailachan chayava, that you believe in Tchias HaMeisim. Gavi HaMebesis's answer says, Vailachan chayava, I understand what the more says, a person doesn't believe in Tchias HaMeisim, he's a Rasha. Oh, good, fine. But what was the Saluki's argument? And he started the conversation. Then the Saluki says back, you called me a chayava? What do you want from me? You started it. Okay, but that's, So what was the Stuki? What was the Stuki's taina? So Reb Moshe Shapiro, Zichron Bracha, based on a Maral, argues like this. He says that he's saying part of the way we understand Torah is through looking at the world. If the Torah is the blueprint of the world, so we see how the world functions, and you see the Torah. Avraham Avinu came to understand the Torah by contemplating the world. And if you look at the world, and the natural flow of the world is that there's life and then there's death, and that's it. The flow of everything is towards ending. And that's the reality of the world. So if you're going to come along and argue that that's not true, and not follow the natural flow, and deny the natural flow, you're creating something which is not true, and therefore it is upsetting your understanding of reality. And you're going to function based on a reality which is not true. That's wrong. You have to function based on a reality which is true. And the reality is, this is it. Story ends here. The Musar part of the trivet to the rest of the verse, it says, over ayin, v'asir adayin, v'daygim anayin, right? It's a song nowadays, right? I never figured out how the tune fits to the words, it's a little bit of a heavy song, right? Heavy tune, thought. So that thought process in the world is translated. Listen, past, it's gone. Future, the hecatase is going to happen. Let's eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow you shall die. That is the proper way to deal with the world. And if you come along, Rabbi, and tell people not to do that, you're a meanie. I mean, you're a meanie. You're taking away. This is called Karl Marx. This is Karl Marx 101. Right? That by making up this thing called Olam Haba and Tchias HaMeisim, we can keep all the people oppressed. Because we can tell them that there's this wonderful future and wonderful vision of the future. Ignore the fact that you're having a horrible life right now. I don't know, the worse life right now, the better it will be in the future. And therefore, we can keep control over all the masses. And that's how we argue that religion is the opium of the masses. This is how we keep them sedated. Because that's not the reality. Reality is all there is to this world. And that's it. And you're being mean by using this, dangling this fake reality of the future over their heads and promise them all these wonderful things, and you're a chayava, your mom is a Russia. You look at the world, that's not the reality of the world. That is what the argument of the Tzuki is. Gvi HaMebesis comes, says back, in the reality of the world itself, it makes sense. That's not what the world is about. It doesn't make sense that we have this reality of a world with its limited time. The Muslim counter their time based on the year, on the solar year. It's referred to as Shana. Chayesel counts it based on the Chodesh, which is called Chodesh. All the Balei Machshava right away hop on the word Shana is from the word repeating. To be Shana is to repeat again and again and again. It's a cycle which comes over again and again. There's no change. There's the four seasons, nothing changes, etc. And the word Chodesh is from the word Chidush. It becomes new. It's Haloi Dovrahu that the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael. You think about it, the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael. If you're a Kaddish, I mean, like, you know, if we're a Kaddish Baruch Hu and we want to give Klal Yisrael a mitzvah, right? A mitzvah. The first mitzvah we're going to give to Klal Yisrael as a nation. The Avram got Mila, etc. This is the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael as a nation. HaKaddish Yisrael Lachem Rosh Chodashim. Klal Yisrael is not bound by a cycle. There is the point of his time was to say that that's not true. We're not stuck in this reality, which seems to be this world. We're not stuck in this cycle. Ramesh points out that the name for the word for time in Lashon HaKadosh is Zman. Zman comes from the Lashon of Hasmana, preparing. A Zimun. It's about a future. We don't live in the world with it. Just all the Asid are dying. Don't worry about the Asid. I don't have to worry about the Asid. But to ignore that there's an Asid is ridiculous. That's not how we live. We live with our concept of Zman is that it's Hazmana, it's a preparation. You have to. And I think if there's anything which I ever noticed the difference between, if you wanted to find the difference between a mature thought process and an immature thought process, is this issue. The person who is able to look at a picture of a reality over a period of time and make a decision from that vantage point, that's called maturity. And a person who sees it from a very, very limited focus of this moment, that's immaturity. It's a fascinating thing. Sometimes a person asks me to make a decision, and I says, okay, so it could be just a question of right and wrong. I'll give a simple example. Then I'll start with that. You know, should I say something or not? Well, how are you going to feel about this decision in a week from now? If you say this, right? I say something negative about somebody, Lashon Hara. How do you feel about it a week from now? I won't be happy. So why do you want to do with it? Right? Once you introduce the idea of how we're going to look at this from a vantage point of the future, the answer is usually much, much clearer. Person wants to make a decision. A more significant decision. What do you want to do with his life? How he wants to marry, etc. These decisions which you don't make him feel like, right? I really enjoy spending time with her. It's okay, I have to picture how is this going to look? Again, we don't know. But with the Kalim Bersham gave us, we try and look at it from the vantage point of the future. Should I do this? Should I do that? Because we understand that that's a mature way of looking at something. So the greatest maturity is understand that this world is just a hakana for something greater. That's the maturity that we're called upon to understand. So Klal Yisrael relearns the concept of Zman. Klal Yisrael is given the concept of Zman, and Yetzias Mitzrayim was that life that we saw. It's not about taking us out of Mitzrayim, because taking us out of Mitzrayim was very easy. Targum Rishal, Targum Medicine. Barsham took Klal Yisrael to Mitzrayim. The night of Pesach took us to Yerushalayim, brought Mazmak of the Karban Pesach in Yerushalayim, and then brought us back to Mitzrayim. And if I would have been there, I would have screamed, "No, I don't want to go back because I'm out. I'm in Yerushalayim. I'm Eretz Yisrael already. So why am I going back?" The answer: that wasn't the goal. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim wasn't Yetzias Mitzrayim. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was the lessons which we're supposed to take out of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was the Yud Gimel Ikrim. The goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to develop a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, understand how we're supposed to perceive him, what message he wants to give us, and how that's going to impact and absorb into our realities. And that's your Gimel Ikrim, the five of Kadosh Baruch Hu, the four of Nesinas HaTorah, and the four of the Bereshis Hashkacha, the reward and the punishment, and the purpose that he wants for us to accomplish. So Christ becomes the Yam Suf, Oz Yosher Yisr, right? Hashem Yom Loch Lo'olam Bo'ed. They see the reality of Hashem Yom Loch Lo'olam Bo'ed. They see it. They see it then. The Amr Dabra points out the word Shira. Says the word Shira. The more you use the word Shira, the more it says something is a Shir, right? The more it says it means a circle. The more Bava Metziah, Eilam Metziahs, more in Shabbos, talks about wearing the different types of jewelry. Referred to as a shear, it's a bracelet, it's a circle. The circle is that the end is comes back to the beginning. You can't Hashem Yimloch L'Olam Ved Hashem Alchusei Kaim L'Olam L'Mem Miyor. The Targum touches. It means they saw it now. Malchusei Kaim L'Olam L'Mem Miyor. The clarity of a shira is that something is not what it seems to be. It looks like, A, you know, you write a poetry, right? You know, right? Poetry is, it's much greater than what it says. It's not just the words. So the same thing is true in life. We were in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, being in Mitzrayim had a purpose. It wasn't just, well, it happened to be in Mitzrayim, and you know, now we're saved. The Kleiso needs to go through Mitzrayim. Christ needs to go through the steps of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Christ needs to go through the Makos. Fascinating thing that the Makos are not referred to in the Torah as Makos. They're referred to Nega, Magi Vesai. They can refer to as Oysos, Moivsim. For Christ, they were Oysos and Moivsim. For Mitzrayim, they were Makos. And that was part of the lesson also. But the point is they were oysos, they were signs, umoifsim, they were proofs, they were messages. That the purpose of Mitzrayim is Kleisel needed to learn some things. Again, the purpose wasn't to leave because they were actually in Eretz Israel already. And they were brought back to Mitzrayim to leave Mitzrayim. That's very inefficient. And, you know, we could theorize if we'd be there, we'd be very upset. That wasn't the goal. The goal was, and Kleisel learned to see a greater picture. That's Shira. That what seems to be a prat in front of us, that's not the picture. You perceive it in the context of reality of generations. You see it in context of a future. You see it in context of Tchias HaMeisim. And that's the final picture that you're supposed to see. So Tchias HaMeisim in the Torah is Oz Yosher Yisrael. Klai Yisrael was able to see with the Shira of Hashem Yimloch L'Olam Bo'ed, the clarity of Losid Lovoi. Klai Yisrael was able to see now. And you know what? And they'll sing it again. Because this exact same Shira is going to take place, Mamish, at the moment of Tchias HaMeisim. They have the same clarity. What the Shev Kal Yam saw, the Merkava. He saw how everything in the Bria is just carrying a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing but a Kadosh Baruch Hu running the show. The Sus V'Roich V'Ramah V'Yomer, Moshe says, is the Mitzriim, because the Bereshim is the Roichev. He's the Merkava. Everything is there just a heck of tips for him. That's the clarity of Losed Lovoi. Kleisel sees that now. They sang Shira. It means they saw how the end and the beginning all go together. But what Gevira ben Masisa is telling us is you don't have to see it's a sign for that. He says, and you come along and say that, you know, I see in the Bria, the Chayava, he says to the Tzuki, Chayava, Russia. How dare you deny that in the reality of this world we see the process, that we see the process that this world, that any person of sane mind should think that the purpose of this world is this world. This is Sharm Perek Aleph. That it's not any person who has seichel to think that the Bereshim created such a gabaldic kayach of which we exist in our being, that it should just function for this world. for the fleeting moments of this world, for the pain and the tzora and the tzara, which is here. So you, the same way you're arguing to me that I'm a chayava and I'm stealing from everybody their moments of enjoyment. I'm arguing back that you're stealing from everybody their moments of enjoyment. You're a chayava. You're a mechuyev. It's an avla what you're doing. You're gathering from me my picture of the reality by arguing in tchias amesim. You're stealing from me my picture of reality. You're a ganav. Remershes shuva. You steal the test now, and you don't catch what's going to play out in years from now. You're a ganav. Interesting thing. We have a Siva in the Torah, says five mitzvah kiger hisa baratzoi. If you think about that, I mean, the descriptions of Chazal of the shibud, the kashya shibud of the mitzriim, right? Tell a person who went through the camps, l'sasav germani kiger hisa baratzoi. He gave you food. Yeah, 800 grams a day. With bromide in it, so it should dull your senses, you shouldn't be able to run away. He gave you food. Of course, a toif. What does the Pesach say? Somebody asked me to say, he says, they had weapons, Rashi says. So Mitzrayim come running after them and says, no, supply the weapons, use the weapons. The survivor who went to the war, and you put a gun in his hand after the war, it would be a very difficult argument to say he wasn't going to shoot. Some did, some didn't. But if you put the weapon into it, Christ was had weapons in their hands. The Mitzrayim are coming after you. So the Ebenezer says, slave mentality, doesn't explain it. There's a medrash, Parshas Veschanon. It says that Hanisa Lakim Lavoy Lakachos Goy Mikarav Goy. So it's Goy Mikarav Goy. It says like the roya, when the animal is having difficulty giving birth, and he has to stick his hand inside of the rechem of the animal to pull out the child, and he pulls out the child. That is the mushroom that the Medrash explains. That's what Goy Mekarev Goy means. Kleisel was born in Mitzrayim. It wasn't a relationship. It was a relationship of being born in Mitzrayim. The experiences of Mitzrayim were an experience which Kleisel needed to absorb to be able to be Kleisel. And Kleisel was smart enough to know that. From a vantage point of Netzach, of Tchias HaMesim, of the gigantic picture, they're able to look back and say, you know what? I needed to go through that experience. That experience was an experience which Klai Yisrael needed to go through to become Klai Yisrael. If Klai Yisrael was born in Mitzrayim, we're not going to raise a hand against Mitzrayim. We talk about Bipurim, we talk about such a Musig. The Gila Yichud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when we see that everything which is Ra is also Toiv. Tchias HaMesim is that moment where we were able to look back and see that. So from a Kadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point, the world came to show his covet. From Klai Yisrael's vantage point, we were able to be the one who was able to be the one who bore that covet upon our flesh. And from the vantage point of Tchias HaMesim, we get the reward which we deserve for that. Okay. I just want to go back to the original point. The point over here is not reward, it's not punishment. The point is, denying reality is a stupid thing. And the second half of the point is, and when you live with an awareness of reality, it's a whole different life. A person who lives now, being aware, he's impacting tomorrow, 10 years from now, Tchias HaMesim, he lives his life differently. He uses the time differently. He appreciates opportunities differently. He understands that he has a purpose in life. If you want to boil down Mishnah and Perek Aleph to one word, the word is purpose. Being aware that you live for a purpose. It makes life that much more valuable. It makes life that much more palatable. It makes life that much more sensible. I understand that I have a purpose in life. See, it's not this cudgel over your head, you better be a good boy because you're not fulfilling your purpose. That's usually how it's used, you know. Like, you know, so that's such a not fair way of doing it. It says, there's such beauty in your life has purpose. Like the whole world is trying to figure out purpose. And I tell you, the Rosh Hashanah tells you, you have intrinsic purpose in your life. Your life is a life which is to be perceived from the vantage point of Netzach. It's forever. And there's a final picture, there's a final purpose that's going to bring to it. And therefore, use it well now because you'd like to appreciate the purpose that you have. Use your time. Yeah, I tell a guy, he's going to college. You know, use your time well, because this way you'll be able to do a better job later on. It's not, I'd rather party right now. I mean, you know, there's people who say that. But we always said it's logical that that's not a good way to use your time over there. So, that same logic. And yeah, B'shas Maisa, you might be have more fun this way, but every person understands that over a period of 20, 30, 40 years, having had using your time well will make a very big difference in the experience you're going to have the rest of your life. Not only in the future, but you can feel better about it now. Because you know you're preparing properly for that future. You can appreciate the time that you have. The pressure that it creates, yeah, it's pressure, it's still a pressure. But appreciate that it's even right now it's valuable time. It has a function, it has a value. So Kavachomer, when we see the clarity of that, that's what, if we intrinsically understand that life has purpose, it means we intrinsically understand that there's something called Tchias HaMesim. It doesn't end after 70 years. And that's what Rebbe sees with arguing back. Chayova, you're a ganef. You're stealing for people. You say in Tchias HaMesim, you're a ganef. You're stealing the purpose from their lives. Because that means that life is, according to you, life is purposeless. It has no purpose. It's a waste. And why was it created? So it can't be. So a person doesn't understand Tchias HaMesim, doesn't understand the whole relationship of everything which exists. That's what the Rama says, that if one Iker is mentioned in Shas, and the other ones will work backwards and add them in to understand how we can get to that, Tchias HaMesim is mentioned, and everything else is just leading to give us understanding that one has to be. And therefore it must be that there's a moment of the Tzchar of Einish, and the Bershom knows, and it must be the Bershom gave us a direction, takes care. All those things work backwards. And that's what Klaus was able to come to the clarity at the moment of Kriyas Yamsuf.